Okay. Only 10 more presents to wrap. You're almost at the finish line. But first... There. The last one. Enjoy a Coca-Cola for a pause that refreshes.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of the Sabrina Zohar Show. My name is Sabrina Zohar, and I am your host. Happy Friday, babes. Welcome back. We have a very special guest today. One of my favorite humans on the planet, Chris Lee, is here, and he is my favorite neuroscientist. Sorry, Nicole. Love all of them. But we're going to talk about what's actually happening in an avoidance brain when they pull away. What is emotionally unavailable? What are triggers in a relationship? How do they show up? And we're going to give you the science, which is very exciting. Guys, if you need anything, everything's in the link in show notes. You can join the Healthy Foundation course, work one-on-one, ask a question, or just be here with us in the community. Don't forget to rate and review the show, follow along and subscribe, and share it with a friend. All right, babes, without further ado, let's get right on into it, shall we? Sup, Chris?
Sup.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. And thank you for hosting me. Like, I've had such a good time the past couple days.
Yay. Okay, before we get into all the fun stuff, can you please introduce yourself for the audience? Give us your background, who the fuck you are, what do you do?
Yeah. So my name is Chris, and like so many people, I let my trauma inform my career. I didn't think I would be here. I didn't think I would be doing things like this. And it all started about 8 years ago. 8 years ago, I had a series of things completely change the trajectory of my life. I thought that I was going to go into practice and do the doctor things and have, you know, the white picket fence and, you know, all the expectations of a young man. And that definitely wasn't what happened. Within 6 months, I got hit by a car in the midst of, my doctorate program. Lost my dad to suicide about a month later. And then about 2 months later, I found out that I was going to be a dad. All of this in my early 20s, trying to figure some things out. And I was left broken, hurt, traumatized, all the things, without any like tools or skills or coping mechanisms, and quickly realized that how my dad had made a choice to leave was not something that I wanted to inherit. It wasn't something that I wanted to have in my own life. It wasn't something that I wanted to even pass along or start to consider the idea of passing like generational trauma down to my daughter either. So I made a huge shift in my career and I went back to school for neuroscience, trying to get answers for what happened and what's going on inside of my body. What the fuck are these emotions? What do you do with an emotion? Because like most men, we got the three H's, happy, hungry, and horny. And I'm like, oh, there's more emotions beyond that. So I went into that entire world and started to get all of the answers. And those answers led to more questions. And then that led to me understanding the brain in a totally different way. And that's what's brought me here today, is understanding the brain and self-regulation and how to process your feelings, what that even means, what that actually looks like, and trying to bring some data and science so that people that are struggling with anxiety, like heartbreak, relationship challenges, can have some more functional tools and tactical tools to make progress in a meaningful and intentional way in their life.
Okay, so thanks so much. We're done with the episode now. Thanks, you got everything you need.
See you next time.
Well, it's fucking epic. And that's also why I love when we have our conversations, because it's not just these platitudes. You're not just giving bullshit. Like, I can ask you a question and your response is, I'm like, oh, tell me more. And that's why I'm stoked for what we're going to talk about today. We're not going to pigeonhole it and only talk about avoidance. But I think I want to share with the audience my favorite thing that you have taught me. And even if you didn't come up with it, I don't really give a shit. The state story strategy. Yeah. I love it. I have been talking about it even on past episodes, but I've been excited for you to be here. And I think that maybe we can kick this off, because I think understanding that nuance then help us understand the avoidance, why they pull away, and what is emotionally unavailable, and then we can evolve the conversation.
Oh, 100%. So state story strategy is something that I've been using in my own life to help build tools and understand what's going on inside of me and like the sabotage patterns that I have, like where are they stemming from? So the state is like a neurological state. It's the state of how you are expressing. Are you dysregulated? Are you regulated? And those are not like black and white either, right? So being regulated is also like a spectrum. You can be more or less regulated the same way that you can be more or less stimulated, right? So you can be overstimulated and that can create its own stress. But the state for which you are determines how you process input. So if you're dysregulated, if you're stressed out, your nervous system is also a meaning-making machine. And that's going to determine the story for which you tell yourself, the meaning that you give the circumstances and environment for which you're in. And that story starts to drive the emotional perspective for which you take action and thus the strategy. So the regulated state is determining the story and the narrative that you're telling yourself about you, circumstances, state, all of that determining how you're taking action. So you can start to reverse engineer, oh, I took this action because I was telling myself this story, and then it was because this state. And then you can really start to understand how to, I know the heal word is such a cliche, but you can start to understand how to take a more intentional approach to, oh, I got overstimulated, triggered, activated, whatever language you need to do. And next time, I want to activate in this way. I want to go into that more regulated. And it just gives you a better buffer and a better strategy to take different action. So it's not just like, can't wait to heal. And then it's like, oh, I keep getting re-triggered. And I'm like, okay, what? Tell me what the strategy you've been using is. And I'm like, well, I did affirmations in the mirror. And I'm like, awesome. What if we try something different? Right? Because those things might work for you. There just hasn't been a ton of science that supports it for me, and it hasn't been really effective. So that's why I like to go, all right, what's the state? What's the story? And how can we take new strategy?
One thing I wish somebody had taught me about healing and all of these nuances with the nervous system is that regulating your nervous system doesn't mean emotions go away. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden you feel amazing. It doesn't mean that next thing you know, you're skipping on clouds. What it means is that you can now access a place of choice. And once I get to that place of choice, I can determine what's the story and what is the strategy I'm going to use moving forward. And that is the one thing I wish I had been taught, because I had been wasting fucking years of my life trying to make something happen when I wasn't in a state to make that happen.
Yes. Oh my God, yes. People are like, oh my gosh, when I get regulated, things are just going to make more sense. I'm going to be so much more just happy. And I'm like, you're going to be more you.
Yeah.
Which means you're going to have more emotions, right? And that's the thing that I think the internet is bad at doing, is like, oh my God, I'm living such a regulated life. And it's somebody like walking through the beach and they're just flowing through. Like, I got more regulated and I had to process my anger and my frustration and then learn to not shame myself for having those feelings and then recognize that I was guilting myself or like taking space and then, oh, I'm being selfish because I'm self-caring. And then I'm like, oh, I'm guilting myself again. All of that becomes available. Your bandwidth for emotional expression increases the more regulated you become, which means like the availability of your like emotional palette expands.
Can I ask you, because it's something that you've talked about that I really love, and you had made a video and I've been notating them. The fact that when you get triggered, a common misconception I hear about triggers often is like, I should have a partner that never triggers me. If you have anybody that triggers you, you should run. It's not healthy.
Yeah.
All of these are red flags. But really what it is like a trigger is our responsibility. A trigger is a neutral action or inaction. So how is that somebody else's responsibility to regulate my nervous system and triggers?
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask, when we talk about being triggered, what actually happens in the brain? Like, I know there's the amygdala, there is the prefrontal cortex. I know there is a time difference. Mm-hmm. Can you explain from an actual like science perspective so that we can get off the bullshit and the, if he wanted to, he would, and all of these cliches and start to understand how the brain actually functions?
So you're not, to triggered is a word that we use, and this is going to kind of get into like the language of it, but your nervous system isn't triggered, it's predictive. Right? That's what it is. That's what a trigger is. It's a predictive mechanism where your nervous system doesn't care what the thing is, what the circumstances. It is asking the question, what does this look like? So it's taking in events, data, relationship, all the things that are going on all at one time, taking that in, and it's comparing it to the past. And it's going, during the past, did this look like a threat? Was this a dangerous circumstance? Was this a dangerous event? And if it was, and you survived, it's going to take the state for which you survived that circumstance, and it's going to deploy that in a predictive mechanism for you to manage the circumstance. This is how we get stuck in our patterns. So we take that familiar past and we impart it on an unfamiliar circumstance that looks similar to that thing. So when we get into those patterns, it's not a matter of like, oh my gosh, like I can't, like I shouldn't have a person that's like not going to trigger me. You want a person that you feel safe to be triggered with.
Yeah.
And then you want somebody who can hold that space for you, because oftentimes, like if you get into a relationship, the truth of the matter is, the more regulated that person is, the more the unprocessed shit from your past relationships is gonna come up.
Oh yeah.
Right? Like that's like the whole thing that I wish more people knew, is that like the safer you are, the more regulated you and your partner are, the more you co-regulate, you're not gonna be less triggered. You're gonna be probably more triggered. The big difference is what you give yourself permission to connect with. And what that really means is like, okay, this thing is coming up for me. Are you projecting that back onto your partner? Or are you able to go, oh, wait a second. Okay, I am activated and it has nothing to do with you, but you're here with me. I want to be vulnerable. I want to connect with this. And I'm trying to like figure out what this thing, I'm frustrated right now. And I feel confused. I know that it's not, it doesn't have anything to do with you, but like, I feel mad at you, right? And one thing that I tell a lot of people is like, do you have somebody that you are safe to feel mad with, not at, right?
I love that.
Which is a huge shift. It's a huge difference. And especially like, there's all this like bullshit, like masculinity. I want a masculine man. Like, so stupid. So
dumb. I hate
dumb.
That shit. The masculine feminine polarities. And
fuck me sideways. Like, I cannot. I cannot with that. Because I'm just like, this is like a ridiculous thing. So
we all have both. We all have both.
Right. So if you're using it as a tool to understand, that's awesome. The same thing with like tarot cards and stuff like that. If you're using it as a tool to understand your day, awesome. Is there data in like neuroscience and like studies and double blind placebos? Absolutely not. But if it's helping you better understand yourself, delightful. But this masculine feminine dynamic is, it's not, I don't think it's helpful the way that we consume it and then deploy it back into our relationships. Because oftentimes it's coming from that judgment.
This episode is sponsored by AquaTrue. Guys, did you know that 3 of 4 homes in the U.S. have toxic chemicals in their tap water? And I know we say self-care, self-care. Self-care also includes the water we drink and what we're putting in our bodies. Even though contaminated water looks clear, it could put you at risk for devastating health concerns that include fatigue, hormone disruption, cognitive decline, even cancer. And surprisingly, standard fridge and pitcher filters do little to remove most contaminants, and bottled water contains microplastics. So what's the solution? AquaTrue. It's a countertop water purifier tested and certified to remove 84 contaminants, including chlorine, lead, forever chemicals, and microplastics. Its patented 4-stage reverse osmosis system goes way beyond ordinary filters for pure, healthy water you can trust, including no plumbing or installation, which is amazing. So go to AquaTrue.com now for 20% off your purifier using promo code Sabrina. AquaTrue even comes with a 30-day best tasting water guarantee. Again, that's AquaTrue.com, AquaTrue.com, and the promo code Sabrina.
So to go back to what we were talking about previously, I think you want a partner where you can recognize that you have frustrations, you have anger, because anger is such an easily suppressed emotion, because when you project that anger onto another person, it distances, right? There's not emotional vulnerability. There is attack and defend. When you get into these really beautiful dynamics where you can both co-regulate and then regulate or dysregulate and go, oh my gosh, I think we're both like, this is not a functional conversation. We need space.
One thing that changed the game for me was being able to hold the two conflicting thoughts that my partner can trigger me. It can make me feel like my father, but that doesn't mean he is.
100%.
And that has been game changing. Like an example, last night, Ryan and I, and by the time this comes out, it'll be a month ago. But last night, Ryan and I were having a conversation and we were getting ready to go out. And I said, hey, can I share something with you? And I thought it was just going to be a quick conversation. And I then realized I had been actually really triggered. And it really reminded me of my father. And I made sure to say, I know you're not him, but the feeling I feel is very much the same. I feel X, I feel Y, I feel Z.
Yeah.
What I'm asking from you is this. And we were able to talk about it. And
yeah.
I felt safe enough to bring this to my partner to know this is a place where I can express myself. And it's not, that's what makes him not my fucking dad.
Exactly.
That's what makes him different, is I can have these reconfirmation experiences because I'm not scared of being triggered. What do I do with that? What are my choices?
Yeah.
That's why I regulate. That's why I come back to my body. Not because me regulating means I'm skipping on fucking clouds and everything is amazing.
Everything's fine. Yeah.
But it's because I can access that place to go, Sabrina, what do you need right now?
Right.
What does that look like? And then is it safe of what your partner is doing? Because I'm incredibly in touch with my body.
Yeah.
And I think that has been a big fallacy. If I see one more fucking video from some 22-year-old on TikTok saying that it should be easy and it should flow and and my avoidant, first of all, they're not a goddamn Tamagotchi. This is a human being with experiences. And so I wanted to segue into that. When we look at even like, why do people pull away? I mean, I know both of us have had personal experience in our relationship world, in life, with people pulling away.
Absolutely.
What comes up, whether that be, I think, the anxious, the avoidant, I don't really care, but what comes up when someone chooses to pull away? What's happening in their body?
So before we go into that, I don't know if people are choosing to pull away as much as they are reacting to a circumstance, right? And I think that nuance is really important because I think oftentimes we villainize the avoidant and we say like, well, that person, they just bailed, they just left. And it's like, okay, but if we just have like a moment of empathy, you have permission to have your feelings as well, just as well as they did. But oftentimes we say, well, they're just a bad person. That pulling away strategy for them is a regulation strategy. They feel threatened by probably intimacy. So like classically, an avoidant attachment style didn't have their emotions validated and they didn't have safety in those emotional expression periods when they were developing. Now, I want to mention this as like another caveat of like the scientific world. Attachment theory is still a theory.
Correct.
Right? It's not hard data. It is a tool to help you interpret and understand what is going on in your relationship. For me, understanding that helps me look at how that person had their feelings validated or invalidated, or if that was like being punished onto them for having those feelings. And then they just deploy that when they become an adult. Yeah. So like your feelings were never validated when you were young. Nobody ever held space for you to process and have those feelings. So when there is a ton of intimacy or there is big feelings that come up, their regulation strategy, they're recognizing that the intimacy, the depth, the vulnerability, it's conflict. And conflict is dangerous, right? I have to go. I have to bail because it is safer to leave than it is safer to stay.
And if I may just add the flip side of the coin before you go on, same with my anxious folk, that when you have space, you perceive it as danger. So you want to close the gap. You want to reconnect.
Yes.
You protest behavior. You do anything you can to reconnect. Notice how no one's right or wrong. No one is good or bad.
Right. We have to pull the judgment out of it.
It really drives me insane. That's why I struggle with, that's why I try to normalize, avoid it. Now here, let me throw the caveat. Doesn't mean you have to accept it, right?
100%.
This is
where the boundaries, and like you can clearly describe this to a person and say, hey, we kind of had this thing. And yes, we rupture, regulate, and repair, right? And man, I don't want to tolerate that anymore. Like, are you open to us working through to find a solution on this?
Correct.
Right? Like, how can I help us the next time that this comes up shift and change it? Like, what does that actually look like? Because I struggle with an avoidant attachment. Like, that's my shit. So when that happens, your brain creates this lack of predictability, and uncertainty drives a shit ton of dopamine in the brain. So uncertainty, and this has to do with like the limerence and things like that. So limerence and fantasizing about this partner, like, oh my God, they're so amazing. It shuts down the frontal cortex. It increases oxytocin. And when we do that, we quite literally have this chemical cocktail telling us how amazing they are and how bad it's going to be. And your system both has the anticipation that I need to close that loop. So when we drive that much dopamine into our system, mixed with the lack of like that bonding and the loss that comes with that, that physical pain that we feel like in the midst of a breakup, our nervous system creates that drive pattern. I need to reach out to them. I need to go do that thing. I need to go, because the uncertainty is asking for a predictable outcome. So we try to control what's going on. We reach out, we send 50,000 text messages, or we fantasize about them, or we're just like, oh yeah, I just sent you like $100 bouquet of flowers. I was just thinking about you. And you're like, okay, but like, that was a first date. Like, we got coffee, right? So we got to take responsibility and calibrate what those things are doing, because you're not regulated when you're doing those things. Like, I am a romantic. Don't get me wrong. I love sending some flowers. I'll write some handwritten notes. I'll wax stamp and press it and like do all the things. And I'm also extremely curious during those period of time, like, am I doing this authentically?
Right.
Or am I doing this from like a scarcity? I'm afraid to lose you. And really starting to understand myself through the process of that, because that fawn response, fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. Fawn is a social stress response where we're trying to better control and manipulate the external environment so that we have more predictable internal emotional expression. And that becomes a dangerous ploy, because we externally validate through your actions. You validate who I am, and then my worth is dependent upon how you receive or don't receive my emotions. And this is how people lose themselves. Like, I don't know who I am without you. And it's like, whoa, hold on a second. Like, now we're in uncharted territories. So you become codependent on your identity being based upon how they validate you or don't validate you.
How do you get out of that if you're in it?
So only circumstance is going to outcompete old circumstance. You need new experience to counteract that old experience. So once we start to understand that, there's no amount of intention, there's no amount of affirmations that you can put down on a page. You need to take intentional action, right? So you need to recognize what that pattern is, and then you need to look for incremental improvements over time, right? So I think most people go through like a big fight. And when they have those big fights, what your nervous system is under is stress. So you don't want to build strategy. You don't want to like repair in the midst of the rupture. So this is why like rupture and repair, I'm like, rupture, regulate, give it a sleep, and then come back to it in the morning and see if it's still elevated to that degree. So what you want is to have that frontal cortex back online. You want to be able to have safe conflict inside of relationships, which means you need to bring up what originally was going on, validate the emotion, and then talk about how the environment came up. So when you do that, you want to go back into old circumstances in new states, state story strategy. So I'm going to go in a little bit more regulated to this thing that originally triggered me. I'm going to take some time and mention to you in a vulnerable way, we had this thing that popped up the other day. It was really hard for me. And this is like hard for me too. Like, do you have time and space for me to like share what that experience was with you? And then you get that emotional validation and you say, the next time that we go into that, I would really appreciate if we could do this instead. So then you're creating a new anticipatory pathway. So the next time that event comes up and you're starting to like get a little bit anxious, your system not only has one reactive pathway from the past, you've intentionally created a new pathway, and that's what creates choice. So instead of living in that reactive pathway, we activate the frontal cortex, we use some intentionality, we start to ask questions. The power of question during conflict is that it turns on the frontal cortex, yeah. Right? It's starting to work and twerk some of these other pathways that are giving us more permission to be ourselves and have intentional vulnerability instead of just consistent reaction.
This episode is sponsored by Lola Blankets. I am not kidding when I say Lola has changed my life. First of all, I got their weighted blanket and I have never felt anything so comfortable. It is crafted with ultra soft luxury vegan faux fur and a signature four-way stretch that truly sets it apart. I'm not even kidding. Kobe, our dog, will not sleep on anything unless there's Lola, to the point where we had to get him a Lola dog bed. I'm not kidding when I say he has been snoring louder than we've ever heard him because he's just so comfortable. That's why I love Lola. It is my go-to gift. It's also machine washable, double hemmed for durability, and stays flawless. No pilling, no shedding, even after repeated washes. Guys, I am absolutely obsessed, especially when you just want to feel cozy. It's a little cool out. You want to have your weighted blanket and you want quality that you can trust. Baby, it's Lola. So give the gift of softness this holiday season with Lola Blankets. For a limited time, our listeners are getting a huge 40% off their entire order at lolablankets.com by using code Sabrina at checkout. Just head to lolablankets.com and use code Sabrina for 40% off. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. I remember it's like a story flooded in my head of my dating days. And it was this guy and we lived like a block away from each other in Brooklyn. And I will never forget the first date we went out. It was like the day after Valentine's Day. I remember it just because it was pertinent to something else. And I remember just thinking like, I didn't really like him that much. Mm-hmm. I thought he was okay. He was kind of he was attractive. Yeah. He was a really good looking guy. Yeah. But like, meep. And I remember like I took him home that night. I was like 24.
Listen, we all got a pass.
I was about to say, I act as if I don't do that. I took Ryan on the first one. But whatever. Anyway, so I took him home that night. I remember we hooked up. And then he like left because I was like, yeah, you can go home. You live down the street. In the morning, we went out for lunch. And I don't know what triggered it. But something hit me. And all of a sudden, it was, oh, no, I have to have this. I think it was because he told me that like he had recently got out of something. And they had talked. And I was I want to win this.
Oh, yeah. Competition.
Oh, yeah. And so, I remember playing the cool girl the whole fucking time.
Smooth. Casual.
Just nothing bothers
me.
Resting
heart rate 125.
Yes. And like, I remember even like little moments. And I think the reality was, I didn't really build this to be, like, we spent a ton of time together. I think I dated him for, like, 6 months.
Oh,
and
wow.
We were seeing each other. Like, I remember after we hung out, and then, like, he texted me, and I had gone to bed. But, like, he texted me being like, hey, we're going out. Are you still going to that thing tonight? Do you want to meet up? And I remember waking up in the morning being like, oh, he does, like, think of me. He does care about me. Yeah. Like, this is not nothing. But then, like, something happened, and all of a sudden, I went into, like, you need to earn this. And I was playing it really cool. I remember, like, and to be fair, he was the first sexual experience I had that opened me up into, like, I like this. I don't like this. Very exploratory. So I think I had him as, like, you're this thing I need because you're creating this version of
novelty is another monstrous dopamine drop.
So
it creates that anticipation. Yeah.
And so I remember we dated probably about like 5 or 6 months. And I remember even like my birthday. It was vague, like my birthday's in May. And so this was like 4 months in, 3 or 4 months in. And I remember he like knew I loved lemons and he had like prepared this really nice dinner and he had like a Meyer lemon. And he's like, I just remember you saying you like this and I bought it for you. You should try. And I'd never had a Meyer lemon. And just that, like, I remember being like, wow. And we really connected that night. And he was very vulnerable with me that he was scared to open up, but he really cared about me. I think he was like
12 years older than me. So that was also a caveat. I was 24, he was like 37. And so we were navigating, like, his friends used to call me the teen. And I was like, get fucked. But now I understand it, right? 24, very young. But nonetheless, like, we actually really shared a really nice connection.
Yeah.
He ended up moving. He got a job across the country. He went from New York to wherever it was, Seattle, mm-hmm. Washington, some shit. And I remember I planned a trip to come out to see him. And I was, like, so obsessive with him that even before I went, I would buy him stuff. I would ship it to him. I knew his favorite shampoo and conditioner, so I had it sent. And I was trying to overperform because in my head it was, look, if you see how easy I make your life, you're going to want me.
You're never
going to leave me because look what I do for you. Look how I show up for you.
Yeah.
I did anything he wanted sexually. You got it. Yeah. I took his dog cross country with me to bring him back to his exes. I did anything. Yeah. And I'll never forget sitting in bed, like, he broke up with me, right, after he came back from the trip, being like, I don't want to do long distance. This isn't going to work. He met somebody else. And I still was performing and I was still going into that.
Yeah.
And I remember because what you were talking about of, like, that codependent, my personality is dependent on what you tell me.
Yeah.
It took me like 3 years to shake that and be able to move on and not think of him. I would text him all the time. I would constantly be like, I'm in our neighborhood. Remember when this? And he was very polite, like, that's how I've moved on. Like, it's time for you to do the same.
Right.
And I just remember sitting there as you were talking, being like, man, that's really human. And that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with anybody if you do that. But now that's really about my state was dysregulation. My state was, you're going to leave me. You're going to abandon me. Yeah. You're not going to choose me. The story was, I have to do anything I can. And then what was the strategy? I overperformed.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with anybody that does that. But for somebody like him who was significantly more avoidant and was pulling away, me doing more wasn't going to make him come closer to me. It was going to push him away further because I wasn't respecting his needs.
Judgmental reciprocity, right? It's not one plus one. And if you start to tick and tally inside of those relationships, that's where things get a little fuzzy too. But at the same time, the thing that I wish I saw more, man, this is like such a controversial thing, is like, how awesome was that for you though? In your future relationships, how much did you learn from that?
Oh, I will say this all day. I never regret any of my relationships. I don't regret the relationship where I was a shell of a human. I don't regret any experiences. I would never be where I'm at today because how would I appreciate what I have if I didn't know what it meant to not have that?
It stops being traumatizing when you take more from it than it takes from you.
Oh, I love that.
And so like the fact that you are learning and you've integrated and you're taking that information and moving it forward, like that's the thing that I wish like more people in their 20s, they're like, how do you find someone? I struggle so much to go find someone. I'm like, are you going out? Like, listen, I think people struggle with alcohol and I'm not like go on benders and stuff like that, but like go have like a glass or two of wine, go out and have go out and dance, right? Like why are people not going out and dancing anymore? Like
regulate,
go be a little bit dumb and like get out of like everything you want on the other side of cringe. Like, yeah, I'm a horrific dancer, but I'm sure as fuck tearing it up out there, right? Because like, oh, I figured out that like, that's just an unexplored emotion, right? There's somebody that I saw a video that like everything you want on the other side of cringe and every feeling that you're holding yourself back from in every circumstance, it's just an unexplored emotion. I'm like, oh, I want to expand my emotional palette as well inside of those things. But when people are always like, they get so intellectual, but like the people who are successful in dating are the ones who are out and dating. They're the ones that go out and they try. And it's because they're collecting data. Their nervous system is pulling in that data. They're saying, oh, I like that. And I didn't like that.
Yeah.
Right? Like I have asked everybody like, hey, have you ever had like pickle ice cream?
No, I have not.
Do you think you'd like it?
Oh, I probably would. I love pickles.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But like for me, pickle ice cream, I'm like, oh my gosh. But it doesn't deter the fact that like you have permission to like that thing and I do not. But we have to go out and collect that data in order to know. Now, I have tried pickled ice cream and I do not like it.
Fair.
But that is because I've collected that data. So many people are collecting data just from cognitive experiences. They're overthinking themselves into like, oh, that must be a red flag. That must be this. That must be that. Like no person is a field of green flags.
I wanted to ask you a question. And this is totally, like you said, overthinking. Mm-hmm. I saw this quote the other day and I was like, I'm sorry, this sounds like fucking bullshit, but maybe it's not. And someone said, overthinking is because you don't trust your gut and you're going against your core and you didn't listen to your gut. And I was like, wait. These are videos that go viral because then people are like, oh my God, you're right. I'm not listening to my gut.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what overthinking like clinically actually is? Like what's happening? Is it you don't trust yourself?
Yeah.
Is it like, what is it actually?
So overthinking is your nervous system kind of taking this reactive perspective to information. So when this occurs, like the science of how it happens versus the science of what is happening are two different things. So you need to identify the circumstances, people, environments, and sensory input that is going to create an overstimulation environment that's going to lead to a state of stress, creating a story, and the story is overthinking. When you're overthinking, you are not the director of that story. You are purely an actor. So the default mode network gets turned on. The ACC, the anterior cingulate, gets turned off. And those two things play in accord. So the ACC is located in the frontal cortex. This is where we have a lot of focus mechanisms get turned on. So when we are in an overthinking mode, the default mode network is turned on. Focus is turned off. And what's happening is our nervous system is practicing the problem. It's identifying threat. It's looking at overstimulation. And it's practicing that problem. Because if you really start to analyze, if you like take a moment when you're overthinking, or you look back on all the things that you've overthought, all it's doing is just looking at the problem in different angles. It's not actually addressing the cause or the source of that, because that would require you to actually focus. It's just hitting it enough so that you can curb the appetite, and then it's going and it's building new anticipation pathways over and over and over and over again. The reason that we get stuck in it is because oftentimes when we get into it, we just like kind of like dissociate with head, heart, and feet. Like we're not feeling, thinking, and acting in accordance. And when we do that, bringing that back together is not a strategy that we're taught.
No.
Right? It's a protective mechanism, and it works really fucking well.
This episode is sponsored by AG1. You guys know me. I'm not the best at getting my supplementation. Sometimes I'll wake up, I'll go right to clients. I'm not even taking a beat. And I really want to start taking care of myself more, which is why I started to drink AG1 every single morning. I have more energy. I have better digestive support. I love it. So AG1 is the daily health drink that combines your multivitamin, pre and probiotics, superfoods, and antioxidants into one simple green scoop. It's one of the easiest things you can do to support your body every day, especially with traveling. They have the travel packs. I bring them with me. We add a little bit of water and we just don't have to think about anything, which is what I love. And AG1 now comes in original, citrus, berry, and tropical. I really love berry. It's yummy. All right. So AG1 has their best offer ever. If you head to drinkag1.com/Zohar, you'll get the welcome kit, a morning person hat, a bottle of vitamin D3 plus K2, AG1 flavor sampler, and you'll get to try their new sleep supplement, AGZ, for free, which has become a game changer for my nightly routine. Again, that's drinkag1.com/Zohar for $126 and free gifts for new subscribers.
So in order to turn those things off, like the very simple thing that you have to do is recognize that you're in that state and have the self-awareness. Now, that is where self-regulation becomes an issue, because most people are like, well, I can't change it in the, I don't recognize it until after. And this is where I tell everybody, like at the end of the day, like you need to take some stock and inventory. Like, all right, where did I get dysregulated? Where did I get dissociated? Like, where was the conversation that I had that like really didn't stick out super well? Like Ryan and I were jamming on coffee this morning, talking about like journaling and like how I've been using it to help me process grief and trauma. And like, I do it every night. I like religiously, like the other night I got in, I'd been up for like 17 hours straight. I am dog tired. And I sat down, I'm like, it looks like a third grader's like journaling inside of there, but my nervous system gets regulated because I'm intentionally making meaning out of that.
Right.
So if we don't go do that, our nervous system is going to live in those reactive patterns. And what happens is the more you practice it, the more that it becomes automatic and unconscious. Doesn't mean that it's not happening. It's just automatic and unconscious. And this is what happens when you start to drift into relationships. And oftentimes like, oh my gosh, if he wanted to, he would, is such bullshit, because oftentimes they don't know that it's even going on. And then even worse, we don't have enough communication skill to go, hey, so we need to talk about a thing, right? So this thing popped up and what it turned on for me is this. Are you open to seeing how we could change that in a different light? Because it's reminding me of this thing and I really care about you. I really want this relationship to work. But man, did you know that you were doing this? And most of the time, like they're distracted, they're dissociated, they don't know those patterns are going on. So when I see these like viral videos going on the internet, like if he wanted to, he would, I'm just like, oh my God, stop, no.
when I see those, what I hear is like, you don't actually understand how humans work. Because if you think that people are chalked up to a bumper sticker, that we can just explain every behavior in 60 seconds or less, 140 characters, then you are gravely mistaken on how complex and nuanced human beings are. We know about 1% of the brain, but yet you know so much about this person to identify their attachment style, how they deal with it, what they want, your mind.
You're reading, a narcissist.
Like, anticipating everything, using this terminology that doesn't actually have a place right now in our fucking culture. Mm-hmm. And then it divides more than it connects. Because 100%. We all think everybody is everyone's fucking TikTok university. Everybody knows.
Everybody's a doctor.
Everybody is a this. But for me, I find when I do overthink, especially when I was dating, it was because like, I wasn't trusting myself. I wasn't really stopping and saying, you know what, Sabrina, you don't know what it is. And you're right. And that's okay. You don't need to.
Well, so that lack of trust that we have in ourselves means that we collect information about who we are based on the validation and interpretation of other people. Right. So instead of us externally validating ourselves and saying like, oh, I get to have this feeling and I get to have this experience, we go out and we like kind of like test the waters. So trust definitely plays a factor into that. It's also just a risk analysis. Mm. Right. So your brain is constantly like testing and like playing out to see how some of these things would go. Like the first couple of times that like you and I are like having interactions and we're connecting, I dropped you a message because I was like, hey, that video that you put out, like it was really like meaningful and significant to me. But I think that's all I sent you. I didn't say like, hey, I'm going through this thing and my dad committed suicide. And oh my God, it was the worst thing on the face of the planet. Like, thank you so much. It's helping me, blah, blah, blah. I'm not like, but that's trauma bonding. Right. If you're, and this is my thing, a regulated version of me in communication is seeing how much of me you can safely hold, right? And this like emotional unavailability is like another term that keeps getting like shoved and thrown around like, they're not emotionally available. Did you fucking create an environment where it was safe to be?
That's always my biggest
thing. Can we have this talk? Like, good God.
Like, let's have this talk. The conversation.
Well, men are getting roasted out there. And this like, listen, this is not, it has nothing to do with sex. It has nothing to do with men and women. It just has to do with the way that men are allowed or like culturally accepted to process emotions. Right. And I think this is such a huge challenge where we were watching that thing on the couch this morning. I'm fucking tearing up over here. And I'm like, oh my God, that's such a beautiful thing. And like Ryan had this like amazing, like emotional expression thing talking about like how the two, you like had this experience together. And I'm like, oh my God, like, that's such an awesome thing. You and him curate an environment where emotional expression is available, but not constantly expected. I'm not constantly expecting us to put the scuba gear on and like go into the depths of consciousness and expand our knowledge. Like, it's not like that all the time. And if that's your standard, we got a little bit more work to do on something.
Well, right? I think emotionally unavailable is a terminology that is quite misused. And the reason I say that is because we assume the emotionally unavailable is only avoidance, right? Because they don't tap into their emotion. Here's my harsh reality for my anxious attachers that think emotionally unavailable is just the avoidant. You're equally as emotionally unavailable. You're not understanding what's coming up for you. You're not tapping into your emotions and feelings. You're not saying, here's what I need. Here's what doesn't work for me. This is what I'm feeling. Instead, it's they, them, why, And so when we're emotionally unavailable, we can't be shocked when we also date emotionally unavailable people, because that's fucking safer.
People that tell me that, oh my gosh, this person was emotionally unavailable, I just immediately go to my head of like, well, you probably have bad boundaries.
It takes two. And 100%. That's what we have to say. Yeah. It's not anyone's fault. And that's the thing is like,
yeah, and this is not a blaming.
No one's blaming and no one's shaming. And that's the thing is like not a lot of people that listen to the show, because the audience that we have is fucking epic and amazing.
Yeah.
But the internet people, right? The people that hear a 20-second clip that don't understand the nuance.
Oh, yeah.
They constantly take it as a personal attack of like, you don't get me. And it's like, no, you're not a fucking snowflake, babe. And when we get out of the victim mentality, then we can start to see things of what are my choices? Because the reality is, anything short of not consent, right? If it's not consensual, which we all know what I'm trying to say, that's not part of the conversation.
Right.
But if you're two consenting
adults. Those are extremes. We're not talking about the 10% on each end of the spectrum.
Exactly.
Right? But if I see one more video, like here's five signs that your partner's a narcissist, and it's like they don't validate your emotions every single day. And I'm like, what the fuck, Stick?
Yeah.
What do you mean that that's a trait? Like, where are you getting this information? Like 2-3% of the population are true and genuine narcissists.
Right.
And I have empathy for those people, because if they had to turn into a narcissist, can you imagine how shitty their childhood was? Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that I am accepting of their behaviors.
You're not excusing it.
Yeah. Right. So like I tell my daughter, I love you unconditionally, but we're always going to break check your like actions. right? I love you no matter what. But if you're drawing with Sharpie on the walls, like, baby girl, like, that's not an acceptable behavior. That's not a proper thing, right? And I'm not going to punish you because maybe you didn't know. But if we're going back and forth between that realm of understanding, empathy, and compassion, it's like you have to stop getting the data from the internet. Right. At some point, you need to create your own ability to have experience. And that's what neuroscience has pointed me to over and over again, is like, we have some really awesome data that's coming out on the brain. This is what's going on. Here's what's happening. And if you want the most applicable neuroscience data-driven thing, it's you and you yesterday.
Mm-hmm. That's what my mom always says. Compare yourself to the version of you and nobody else.
Right.
I had a client this morning and she said, I wasted an entire year. And I said, could you please explain to me what you mean? Mm-hmm. And she said, well, we got back to, it didn't work. And I hope she hears me because she listens. And I hope she knows I say this with love.
Yeah.
And I had to challenge her. And I said, so you think it's a waste, but if we look back at the woman that you were a year ago, you're going to tell me she's the same? She said, no. And I said, so that's growth. 100%. We didn't waste anything. Where it's a waste is when you don't learn from it. But now we can reframe and say, I didn't waste a year. I am now learning. I'm not going to spend more time on something that is not giving back to me. This episode is sponsored by Cash App. Sometimes my debit card can be a bit boring, and so that's why I love that the Cash App card has personalization features that I can customize. And here's the best part. Cash App just released a new status program for the way people actually spend called Cash App Green. It unlocks new ways for you to pay, get rewarded, and easily grow or manage your money on your terms. Now, when you spend at least $500 a month with the Cash App card or Cash App Pay, you earn green status, which unlocks benefits like up to $200 of free overdraft coverage, higher borrow limits, and custom personalized cash back offers every Friday at places you love to shop. Turn everyday spending into status with Cash App Green. Download Cash App today or visit cash.app/new to learn more about this and other great features launching. And babes, for a limited time, new Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use code CASHAPP10 in their profile at sign up and send $5 to a friend within 14 days. Terms apply. Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners. Prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Cash App Green, overdraft coverage, borrow, cashback offers, and promotions provided by Cash App, a Block, Inc. brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures.
This is the power of co-regulation. When you can't regulate and her story is telling herself that I wasted a year, she borrowed your regulation strategy, right? So that you could reframe that state for her. And then when you borrow that, and this is what relationships are, right? You're both not going to be regulated at all times, right? Like dysregulated, disconnected, disjointed, overstimulated, all of the shit. It's about a dance. Sometimes you lead and sometimes you follow. But I think so many times we get caught up in like, well, I want him to be masculine. Why is he not? And it's like, well, did you hold space for him? Like, what's that capacity? And then there's also the very real biological regulation that comes into it of like, okay, how regulated are we to have this conversation? Are you like well slept? Did you have like good protein? Like one of the easiest ways to know if it's a good time to have a regulated conversation is just based on how much sleep they had.
Yeah. Oh, right? I am shit for brains if I don't get my like proper eight
Do
hours.
Not have arguments, confrontational discussions after 6 p.m.
And not ever via text. Please, if I can scream this from the rooftops, don't get into the dissertations via text of like the paragraphs and the this.
So here's the communication strategy. Do not text conflict, period. What you want to do is create objective outcomes with a schedule, right? This thing popped up at this time. You don't want to send the message that says, we need to talk.
No, we never want to say that.
Uncertainty. If you want to pull on everyone's shit all at one time, you say, hey, I would like to talk about this thing that happened at this time. I felt this way. Are you open to having coffee tomorrow and talking about this with the hope of understanding how we can activate or how I can participate in this thing differently next time?
And here's the beautiful part about that. What you're describing is that you show up like that. We can't guarantee that they acknowledge it. They could ghost. They can ignore. They can say no, thank you. They could say yes.
100%.
That doesn't matter. How you show up is for you. Because to that point, I was going to ask you, how do you gauge emotional somebody being emotionally available or not? That right there. By having that type of conversation. And if they don't reciprocate, no, thank you. Okay.
Without
we can't even have a conversation about this, then I don't think you're right for me.
Yeah. So this is where like the more self-awareness that you have. Self-awareness without action turns to anxiety. Your nervous system recognizes the ability to change, and then it creates the anticipatory pathway to change it. And then if you don't close that loop, or you're just using cognitive, you're thinking about your feelings and you're not acting upon them, your system builds pressure up so that you take action. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with loneliness, right? Loneliness is a pandemic out there because we are creating artificial connection, right? Whether it's pornography, social media, loneliness is an essential drive to go out and connect people, touch, have conversations, make dinner. Thank you, Ryan, for the dinner last night. It was amazing.
Eye contact.
Like, yeah, eye contact, God forbid, right? Like my daughter, who is now 8 years old, we practice eye contact and handshakes. And we also practice the ability for her to go, oh, no, thank you. I don't feel safe connecting to that person. I don't feel safe connecting to that man. And how I still have the responsibility to protect her as her father when she says, oh, no, thank you. Or she'll put her hands behind her back or she'll place them over her lap. And then I will make sure that it is my responsibility based on the communication that we had that she doesn't feel safe to connect with that person. And I protect that.
Unfortunately, when we're, you know, a lot of kids is go say hi to this person. They force
give them
you.
A hug. Yeah. Oh, Gam wants like, no, I'm not comfortable with that.
Yeah. And it's okay to say no. And I think, I mean, I know it wasn't a safe space for me to say
stop taking no's emotionally.
A lot of people take that very personally. I had somebody in my live like lose their fucking marbles on me, called me a narcissist because she was demanding that I answer her question. And I said, no, this is my live.
Answer it out.
And then she said, you know, you're mean. And I said, you're entitled. And she's like, you're a narcissist. And I was like, Kate, delete. Yeah, like, we're done. Bye-bye. Because when you're so triggered, when you're so wounded that you want everybody else is the problem, we can't be surprised when your life's not fucking changing.
Can't teach a victim.
No. So I wanted to go through some questions that we got.
Let's
and I want to get your thoughts on them.
Yeah.
Now, we can answer individual, or I will say that if you can say the next, and I will.
For sure.
Okay. So, mind you, if you guys want to write in, please don't forget that the Sabrina Zohar Show on Instagram, we have a question box for new episodes. You can write in, and it's the best way for us to be able to talk on episodes. So, here are three questions I think that will kind of all pertain, and yeah. I want to hear your thoughts. So, somebody asked, how to know when it is time to give up on an avoidant? Does couples therapy work for them? When they pull away, do they think or worry that their partner might leave because of that? How do I make him feel safe while also asking him to make some effort to reassure me? What's the common theme that you hear with these questions?
People are projecting responsibility for how they want to participate in the relationship onto that other person. At some point during this relationship, you have to ask if your needs are being met. You're just asking if their needs or what they're doing and what they're thinking over and over again. If you are dating an avoidant and they know that they're an avoidant, or if they don't know when it's avoidant and you are diagnosing them that they are an avoidant, like, what are you? Right? Like it always is back to you. Take responsibility for what is going on. And if you're asking these questions and these are things that are like not something that you've deployed or discussed with your partner, we've really got to work on that. So like the theme of all of those questions is really like, why are you not taking responsibility for how you feel about those patterns?
100%.
Right? So like the one with therapy though, avoidants do not do well in therapy. That is a data point. That is a thing. And the reason that they don't do well in therapy is that therapy is to increase emotional vulnerability. It's an intimate relationship. And that's the thing that is causing them to avoid.
And here's also the reality. Like Ryan's in therapy and I'm really fucking proud of him. And
love you, Ryan.
Do we know why? You want to know why?
Tell me.
Because he chose that.
Avoidants have to be empowered to make a choice. They cannot be forced into that.
What it was me saying, hey, can I share something with you? And he was like, of course. And I said, I don't feel like we have depth. I don't feel like we have what I need. If that's okay if you don't want to provide that. And he said, what do you need from me? I said, I need more connection. And he said, so I think it's time I find someone to talk to because
bang.
I don't have the tools.
Oh my God. Yeah. Puddle on the ground.
Right.
Respectfully.
Like panties drop. And that's the reality. It's like, that's why we're together. I'm not together with him because, oh, he's avoidant and I make excuses for all of his bullshit. Fuck no. It's the same as he doesn't make excuses for my anxiety.
100%.
What we do is we're two growth-minded people saying this relationship means a lot. If we get to a point where it's just not going to happen, that's a decision we make. But a lot of the questions I see here are very much of how can I make them feel comfortable? How can I make them open up? How can I make them do it?
Yeah.
And the reality is like, did that work with your parents?
Well, okay. But before we go down that avenue, because that's a can of worms and a ball of wax. The genius of what you just described is that you created the opportunity for him to have a tolerance of vulnerability. You gave him a window of vulnerability and you opened the door and you asked if he'd like to come in. And he said yes.
That's how it works for a lot of avoidance. Like, and I've done this in the past where men don't, where I will open the vulnerability and it's, no, I'm good. And that's okay. And then what I say is, well, then this isn't for me.
100%. And then that's okay too. But then oftentimes they get emotional and then it's the reactive pathway. And it's like, okay. The thing is, I think what destroys a ton of relationships is the fact that they're dysregulated, but we try to fix emotional problems. Emotional problems are not meant to be fixed. They're meant to be witnessed.
Go on. How do you do that?
It's the same way that we've been having this entire conversation, right? Where if there's this emotion that's coming up and they are just like pouring their soul out, right? And you recognize that they are just having like this meltdown moment, but it is about you. It's not about you.
I was going to say, what I hear, even I was reading more of the questions and people are asking, does it have to do with sex? Why is it going, what is going on when they break up unexpectedly for BS? Do they regret it? He's disappointing me. How does that make them feel? What I'm hearing here, and I say this with so much love and compassion, is that you're trying to find your worth through their actions.
It's codependency. All of those questions are codependent.
Do they feel this? Do they, them, because then that makes me feel worthy. That makes me feel like I was important.
Right.
And I totally fucking get that. 100%. But here's the thing. If someone breaks up with you for a bullshit reason, that's on them.
Yeah.
That's, you cannot convince them and get them back. It's a bullshit reason. And if you can identify that and say, oh, you're so quick to walk away for that, we wouldn't have been able to make it in a relationship.
100%. Yeah. Thank you for exposing that version. Right. Now, is there room for forgiveness? Did they change? Right.
And what did they do?
And that's because if they're like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. Right. Like, I think if you're in a relationship and somebody makes a mistake, I think one of the greatest tools that you can have is to validate the fact that, hey, I'm really sorry that I hurt you. Right. I didn't intend to do that maliciously. And I don't want to, you know, hide the fact that that definitely hurts you. Here's what I plan to do differently next time. Right.
Yeah. There's just a lot of emotional monitoring. How do I ask them without them freaking out? How do I get them to open up without them feeling that they could shut down? It's like you were saying, what safe space are you creating? Are you sharing something vulnerable?
Yeah, are you leading with vulnerability?
Of like, hey, I wanted to share that this is something that like I experienced in childhood. Did you ever have that?
Yeah.
Because then they're like, oh, I'm not going to be. And then they share it. And you say, thank you so much. That actually makes me feel really close to you. I'm really grateful you shared that with me.
100%. And vulnerability is like, it's hard.
It's very hard.
Right? Because your whole system is rebelling against giving that person data that oftentimes the last time you did that, your nervous system was attacked. So you give somebody that data, right? And you're like, well, this is how I really feel about that. And then they take that information and they use it against you. They weaponize your vulnerability mm-hmm. against you. And I unfortunately know that that has happened to pretty much every single person that breathes there. And it doesn't mean that just because that person attacked you and they use that vulnerability doesn't mean that all people will, but that's how your nervous system interprets. It doesn't care what it is. It looks at what it looks like. So if you can have that information in your pocket and recognize that your system is not wanting to be vulnerable because it's reminding you of this thing, you have to create new environment, new circumstance to counteract and compete those old pathways.
I remember once I was dating this guy and at first he was so perfect, like to the point where I'll never forget. And if you've listened along, you know, I called him the conventionally handsome guy because he was my mom. Yeah. She's like, he's very conventionally handsome. Mm-hmm. But as I started to get to know him, I was getting less and less turned on because I started to see. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, he was so perfect at first, like to the point where even I was like, it's enough. Like you're laying it on too thick.
Yeah.
And I remember he like came up to me, my best friend, and she looked at me and she goes, either that's the love of your life or you're getting fucking played. And I was like, mm-hmm. And I remember he like came to visit the whole thing. And long story medium is like, toward at the end of it, when he showed me he just did not have the bandwidth, he did not have the communication I desired. He was staying at my house. He came back. He came to like thinking he was going to talk, mm-hmm. that we were going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And he had like totally dicked me over the night before. Like this, yeah. There was no more conversation. It was too much. I was done. Right. And I was proud of myself that I had only done like a month or two. Like it wasn't a 6-year thing.
Right.
And he showed up at the house and I didn't even let him in my house. That was my boundary. I was like, no, no, no. And he was like, I had his bag packed. And he was like, did you get everything? I was like, yeah, I saw all of your stuff and it is in this bag. And we talked for 5 minutes. And then he goes, but Sabrina, you know I'm emotionally unavailable. And I said, yeah, now get the fuck off my porch.
It's not for me. Thank you.
And did I cry? Yeah, I was sad. I was 100%. Bummed. I checked my phone hoping he was going to regret it and come back to me. And he didn't. I didn't hear from him. He moved on with his life. And so did I. And 9 months later, I reached out to him and I was like, hey, and I'll never forget. I said, like, how are you? And he goes, oh, I'm actually in LA. You want to get dinner tonight at 8:30? And I called my mom and she goes, you're fucking kidding me, right? And she said, this motherfucker was in your city, in your place, and he's just fitting you into his schedule at 9 o'clock at night. And she was like, you're going to really do this? And I texted him back and I said, this doesn't work for me. Take care.
Yeah.
And I met Ryan 3 months later. And the reason being, and the reason I share that is because I had to make space. I had to look and go, agreed, that doesn't work right? for me. And that's what I'm seeing in a lot of the questions that we've been getting is that people don't think they have a choice.
This is the power of no conflict, though, and grieving through the no conflict that goes on. Because if you continue to maintain conflict, your brain is continuing to reward the anticipation, right? So your brain running on that dopamine is not a reward, right? It's anticipation.
Right.
So once you can start to understand that, no conflict, you have to essentially detox them from your nervous system. And yeah, like any addict, it's going to suck for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
You just have to embrace the suck. You grieve. You eat ice cream. You go to the gym. You talk with your friends. You go have these types of conversations. But if you don't and you like kind of breadcrumb and you're kind of like going to do some of those strategies and they're like kind of like doing that, all that's doing is building this like false sense of hope.
All right, Chris, I have one more question because I don't want to make it about everybody else. I want to bring it back in-house for how they're feeling. How do you move on from a breakup with an avoidant in a healthy way?
All the energy and attention that you were giving to that relationship, it goes back to you. So you give yourself permission to grieve. You close that loop because grieving is really changing the dynamic of the relationship and it's closing that loop on your terms. Closure is bullshit. What that's doing is giving yourself permission to reinvest into yourself the way that you were investing into that relationship. So give yourself permission to let go and turn that energy back inward.
And what's really important about doing that is I think a lot of people get confused of like, how do I give myself the love that they didn't? It's like start to get really honest with yourself of what your needs weren't met, what they didn't satisfy, how you felt like shit, how you hated when they fucking walked out of the room, how it was terrible when they would leave you on the floor crying. Take up that space because you're allowed. Instead of gaslighting yourself and putting them on this pedestal that they were the God's fucking gift, instead you can hold them accountable and say, I didn't like that. And instead of me projecting on what I wanted them to be, I'm going to hold space and grieve the fucking fantasy and start to face the reality.
Allow your feelings and trust the patterns.
Chris, this was honestly like just a fucking epic conversation. I'm so grateful that you were here.
Yeah, this, like I said, like the problem wasn't going to be like, are we going to have enough information to talk about? It's like getting us to shut up. That's going to be the problem.
Oh yeah, for anyone listening, we were talking about this episode. We had no notes. We literally
this has been going.
Idea.
Yeah, we've been talking like this for 72 hours since I flew in. Yeah, it's been like this since we got Thai food. Yeah.
I'm stoked. So guys, this is the first of many. You will be back. And I mean, you don't have a fucking choice. I will fly your ass out of here to come back.
It's going to be amazing.
We're going to do it. So tell everybody, where can they work with you, reach you, find you, how, in what capacity, and how can they connect with you?
Yeah, everything's at Dr. Chris Lee. I help people work through dysregulation and build businesses that are built on lifestyle instead of just money and all the other things. So if you guys are interested in having a more regulated nervous system, add Dr. Chris Lee.
We'll tag everything, TikTok, Insta, all the fun shit.
Love it.
And dude, I'm stoked. Thank you again for being here.
Thanks for having me.